Hey, Hills.
What's up?
Oh, just same old, same old. It's like I just got back from Nashville.
Yes.
And that was pretty fun. I got to go see Dad and spend a few days with him.
Yeah, so we've got a little something different for this week's episode.
Yeah.
You get to hear from Paw. Well, growing up, we called him Peepaw, but that very quickly got shot down. He told me he did not like being called Peepaw. So he would prefer to be called Paw is what we call him. But to you, he's Dad.
Yeah.
And you got to interview him a little bit, or?
Yeah, I did. It was a really fun time. We sat around. We drove around to some of the old places, and we just hung out for a few days. And it was neat. So I took the recorder, and we sat one day, and I'd hook the mics up, and we hit record. And I started asking him a lot of questions about his perspective of me and music, and when all that started.
Yeah.
And I have my perspective, and then you have your perspective. And so it was cool to hear his perspective of him as my dad, seeing me start to gravitate towards music.
Awesome. Well, we hope you guys enjoy this special episode with Dad and his dad.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Brent, and I am recording this in Nashville, Tennessee, where I was born and raised. I'm actually at my dad's house, and I got Dad on the show today. I want to have Dad tell his perspective of my life being his son and how he saw the music thing happen from his perspective. And then we're going to talk about real life stuff that is not public knowledge, but it's stuff that I did as a kid, and Dad had to put his dad hat on. Welcome, Dad. Good to be with you.
Well, good to be here. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, man. It's good to be home. And I just wanted to talk to you and get your perspective. I come from a musical family, but
yes.
But I want to hear your perspective on, as I began to grow up, you know, when did you first see that boy, this kid has an interest and a passion for music? And then when did you see the skills start talking? I have my personal memories of listening to gospel music, and because that's what you sang and you traveled, and
yeah.
But I remember records. I mean, I've heard you tell the story a lot about how I would sit and listen to records. You'd stack them up for me. I want you to tell that story.
Well, yeah, you were. You couldn't have been more than four, maybe a little younger, maybe two and a half. Your mom had two other children. You were the oldest of the three.
Mm-hmm.
She had her hands full, so and we couldn't afford any babysitters.
Right.
But I had all these gospel records either that I had bought or other groups had given me. I had stacks and stacks and stacks of gospel music. This is all Southern gospel, which is mm-hmm. the type of music I did. So consequently, you being growing up in two different musical families,
mm-hmm.
You had a marvelous ear for it. And you didn't want to watch cartoons like most little kids that age.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatnot, you wanted to hear the gospel music. So I had, in our den, I had the old turntable that played 33 and a third albums.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of young people probably don't know what an album is.
They don't know that. Yeah, an LP, it had an A side and a B side.
Exactly.
A lot like a cassette.
Yeah.
But this was an album, and you could stack.
It's 14 inches wide.
14 inches wide, and you could stack. How many could you stack at once on the arm? You could stack 12.
12, 12 each.
You could stack 12, and it would play the bottom one, and when that was done,
it automatically
would go up, and somehow it would eject
another one down.
It would on
top,
and then
the arm would come over and start the next record.
Yeah, and so I would go through 12 A sides, and then I'd yell,
"Turn on,"
and you'd come over and take that whole stack and flip them over, and I'd go through the B side.
So actually, we had about 3.5-4 hours of babysitter. Like that, because you would
for
sit
for free.
Yeah, we had bought you a little small rocking chair
mm-hmm.
that was just kind of made for you.
Yeah.
And you would sit down in front. I had two large speakers hung on the wall.
I remember that.
And on each side of a big
window. Yeah, on the front of the house.
And at that time, it was probably one of the best stereo that you could find somewhere. And where I got the money to buy it, I don't know. But anyway, I had it. But anyway, for hours, you would sit there and listen to the gospel quartets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, both of our families come from Southern gospel music, my wife and my family.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, that you were...
I was born into it.
You was born into it. I mean, you didn't have a chance. You had mm-hmm. you had to be around music. You had to. It was part of your life.
Right.
We played music. If the families got together, we ate and we sang.
Right.
You went with us wherever we went, and you sang. And now all the kids could sing. Just about mm-hmm. all your cousins and
everybody sang.
Everybody could sing. I don't know. I can't think of one that really was not a fair singer.
Right.
But you had a special talent because you invested time of listening to it
mm-hmm.
at a very early age. And I can't remember your exact age when I noticed that you could sing harmony.
Mm-hmm.
But you had learned it by listening to those four major parts of a gospel quartet.
Mm-hmm.
And I came in from work one day, and I'm sitting in my chair, and you're sitting there and listening to your music as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And the other kids, I don't know where they were, but I'm sitting there, and you're singing a certain part of this record. I mm-hmm. said, "What are you listening to, son?" You said, "Statesman Quartet
mm-hmm.
from Atlanta, Georgia."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Oh, you are." I said, "Who's that singing?" He said, "Oh, that's Jake Hess."
Mm-hmm.
He's the lead singer.
It's crazy that I knew that.
And I said, "Well, you knew all of them."
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, you know old Jake?" "Yeah, I like Jake." Well, I said, "Well, who's that singing tenor?" "Oh, that's Rosie." I said, "Can you sing his part?" You all at once broke into singing the tenor part.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in my chair. He's singing the same. He's doing a good job. Say he's staying on pitch. He's singing it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "What about Doy Ott, who was the baritone singer?
Mm-hmm.
Can you sing Doy's part?" You switched right off and started singing the baritone part.
That's crazy.
Now, as I say, at 4 years old, you had a hard time with the bass part.
Yeah, I would hope.
I don't think you ever got the bass part.
No,
did you?
I still can't sing. But at 5 a.m. in the mornings, I can sing
maybe,
for about 5
maybe
minutes.
Maybe a high bass.
Yeah, I can sing a low G below middle C.
But anyway, at the time, I probably didn't realize it, that it was probably a God thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, this is just natural, this kid. But you had more from all the other kids. You develop quickly. Now, a lot of them still, all of them could sing.
Yeah.
Finally got to where they could sing the harmony parts. And we had a great family gatherings and
mm-hmm.
great singing. It's great singing. If a lot of them were still alive, I'm sure we'd still be doing it.
Yeah, we would.
You know, you just showed an interest in developing your musical talent much earlier than all the other kids. Not that the other kids are not talented.
Oh, no.
Your sister is probably one...
She can sing,
of the
sing,
best
sing,
female singers that I ever heard. She, and I'm not saying it because she's my daughter.
No, I ain't saying it because she's my sister. She can sing circles around us.
And your brother, who has gone on to be with the Lord,
yeah,
you know, he was probably one of the top guitar players in Nashville.
Yeah, me and Bo used to talk about it. He's like, "I won't sing around you if you won't play guitar around me." and it was, you know, because I never was, you know, and we used to talk, you know, we used to have, he played for me in the early 80s, and he played on my records and played on stuff I produced and stuff. And, you know, we had conversations about there are people who sing and then there are singers.
Yes.
And there are people who play guitar and then there are guitar players.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would always talk, like, I play guitar, but he was a guitar player.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's you know, you find your niche within that passion that you have, and you develop that. Hopefully you develop that.
But, see, you always had such a question about how do these people do this. When we'd have our gatherings, you didn't go out and play with the rest of the children as much. And, of course, after we would eat, of course, we were big on eating also, not only singing. But
we did that professionally,
we
too.
We could eat.
Yeah, we're professional eaters.
But when we'd all gather around the piano and start singing on Sunday afternoon, or if we weren't singing at a church somewhere,
mm-hmm.
you weren't the one to go outside and play ball. You were standing at the end of the piano.
Yep.
And you were studying it.
Yeah.
And most of the time you weren't singing. You were just looking at us and listening to mm-hmm. us. You'd have sort of like a look of awe on your face.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that now Dad is singing this thing, Uncle Kenny is singing this part, Aunt Nanny is singing a part, but they're all singing different things.
Yeah, but it all...
But it all blends together.
I tell you, I know how tall I was, because I could hold my hands at my nose level on the edge of the piano.
Really?
That's how little I was.
Yeah, you were small.
And I remember thinking, they're all singing they're singing the same words, but they're all singing different melodies. I didn't know what a melody was, yeah. But they're all singing different stuff. But it all fits together as a group, and I love how that sounds.
Yeah.
And I remember that listening to that gospel music, there was almost always through the whole song, there was multiple people singing, either a one-part harmony or two-part or three-part.
Yeah, but here's another part of it. See, 90% of us could not read music.
Yeah.
We didn't know what. It was all a natural ability to hear the harmony parts.
Yeah.
And to pick out where your voice fit in that particular
Yeah, we all have part. Our own range. Yeah.
And all that came together, and you were always amazed with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a gift from God for people to understand. Not everybody has that. Of course, you know, music is a great thing. I'm not putting down the fact that you need to learn music. I'm not putting that down at all.
Rattell, I want to talk about playing guitar. You and your brothers and
yeah, we play.
Mama's daddy and everybody play guitar, be stringed instruments, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I come along. I'm the first left-handed person in four or five generations that we know of.
Yeah, so exactly.
And they were all right-handed instruments.
Yeah.
And so I still remember, I have a mental picture of me and you sitting on your bed.
And me showing you chords.
And you showing me playing, like, you know, Hank Williams songs and, you know, all them old country songs and stuff, and me trying to play it right-handed. And it was just the most awkward. I couldn't hold it. The guitar didn't fit my body. But also, it's just everything that my right hand was doing, my left hand wanted to do, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get in high school, early high school, maybe junior high.
I think it's junior high.
Junior high. And I had a friend leave his guitar at our house because he didn't have a case. He decided he was going to play, and so he brought it over. Didn't even have a case. And it was raining when he left, and so he left it in my bedroom. And I had a dream one night that I was on stage playing guitar. So I'm sitting on this stage playing guitar, and when I woke up, that dream was so vivid, I remembered how I played my chords to that song in my dream, and it worked, and I played it. But it was a right-handed guitar,
yeah,
strung for a righty, but I had flipped it over and was playing it. So my low E is on the bottom and my high E is on the top. And that's when I started playing guitar. And I still play that way.
I know you do. And you know, when you tried to change my guitar,
yeah,
turn the strings upside down.
Yeah, to make it a true lefty, you wouldn't have been able to play.
I wouldn't have been able to play, so yeah. I made you change them back.
Yeah.
You had a natural talent for anything, and I thank God for all that talent.
Yeah.
You had an opportunity to learn and listen to that kind of that's something that would last you the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So that you have to count that as a blessing or a curse. I don't know which one.
Yeah,
you
no,
do.
It depends on what's going on at the time, but it's mostly a blessing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's when I started writing songs. You know, I have to credit you. I was always fearful of failing, so that kept me from wanting to try. I don't know if I can, and I think every dad sees that in their kids
sure
at some point
do.
About something. But you always told me you can do whatever you want to do as long as if you're willing to put the work in and commitment.
Exactly.
You can do whatever you want to do, and so that gave me the push I needed to start really pursuing playing better. Now I always had my little brother. Everything I could do, he could up me two or three or four. I remember him too sitting in his bedroom for hours at a time playing quarter notes, learning his scales.
One of my most vivid memories is when you decided y'all were going to have a band together and got in my basement and turned the amps up just as high as they would go. And this old house we live in, I thought it was going to knock the house down.
Yeah.
I couldn't hear the television. Every 5 minutes, I'd have to walk to the basement door and say, turn it down a little bit.
Yeah, we used to joke. It's like, this is our rehearsal hall, and it happens to have a car, a washer and a dryer, and a bass boat in there. Our rehearsal hall has a bass boat in it. And we would set up around all that stuff. And I remember that. And I remember you would sit on the basement step sometime and listen to us, and we'd be rolling, cleaning stuff up after rehearsal, and you'd say, son, where are y'all going to play this music? And I'd say, anywhere they let us play. Because we were trying to reach teenagers, and so yeah, we could lure them in with the music.
Which was foreign to me at the time. Yeah. Of course, I'm old Southern gospel.
Yeah, yeah.
And what y'all were doing sounded like rock music with Christian themes about
yeah, Christian
it. And
lyrics.
I'm thinking, there ain't a church in this country going to let y'all play that music. Where are y'all going to play this? Why are y'all wasting your time doing this? Get on to something that'll sell.
That's crazy. So, yeah, we all started that, and I remember I was writing all of our own songs.
Yeah.
Because that's something else. You said, man, you can write a song. That motivation was what made me like, okay, I have what it takes, but it's undeveloped, and I can always learn to be a better writer. You know, songwriting and the music business in general is you have to learn to accept rejection, because most of what happens is rejection.
You know, as you and I have talked before, songwriting is like anything. It's a craft.
It is.
You have to learn. You know, me being your daddy, I lied a lot of times. The first things you wrote.
Yeah.
You know, I tried to give you encouragement and say, yeah, that's real good,
Brent. That's awesome. Keep going.
And
you're thinking, don't play that in public.
I'm thinking, don't let anybody hear you say that. But
exactly.
You know, for whatever level of success you've had, and you're modest, and you've had a great success, your writing has developed over the years to a point to where people will listen. When you first started, nobody wanted to listen to you, but they did it because they loved you.
Right. When I started writing songs, I was a kid, and Mom had two cassette players that she would listen to sermons on.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I thought of it or how I thought of it. And I think that's part of the gift that God gave me.
I do too.
Let's watch him develop this, you know. But I remember having two cassette players that had an internal little mic in them. They were little portable ones. And I got two blank cassettes, and I would hit record on one and play the guitar and sing. And then I'd rewind it. And then I would hit record on the other tape machine and get it to where it was recording the first tape. And while it was recording those internal mics, I would sing a harmony part. And I was multi-tracking is what I was doing.
I remember you playing that particular tape.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how did you do that?
I had two or three harmonies on it and two or three guitar parts.
How did you do that?
Yeah. And I look at that now, and it's like that had to be the Lord.
Yeah.
Just putting that in me to know, to even want to do that. But, and I, you know what? I still love recording. Personally, I've probably got 20 records I've done. They all went double plywood or triple linoleum or something.
You're modest.
No, seriously, I could always make records. I could hardly ever sell them.
Well, God has definitely used you all these years, and he's given you a talent that surpasses anything that I remember. You know, I've told many people that, you know, yeah, I was raised in a talented family, and my wife was. But your generation, y'all's talent is so much more advanced than what we ever were. And that makes me extremely proud.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of stuff that happened in my life happened again with my children. And so, do you remember the time on Sunday afternoon that me and my buddy wanted to go. We were bored, and we wanted to drive around. And so we had this Volkswagen thing that you had bought for us to deer hunt in. And you said, you can go anywhere except Elm Hill Pike.
Yes, I remember it vividly.
I'm sure you did. Tell your side of that story.
You know, at that time, apparently nothing else was going on. So we were home after church on a Sunday afternoon. We had gone through a tremendous monsoon season here in Nashville. Water was everywhere. There was a stretch of road down a little bit south of us where they were building a new road, but they had only gotten as far as leveling the dirt out.
Mm-hmm.
it was nothing but about a mile of mud, absolute mud, about 18 inches deep.
Which is about what the axle, how high the axle
was. It
was
a little higher than the axle. You and your friend decided y'all wanted to do something. You said, hey, Dad, can we take the thing and drive around a while? I said, yeah, I guess so, son, but whatever you do, don't go down on M Hill Pike, because they're building that road down there, and it's nothing but a pile of mud. I had just lain down to take a little Sunday afternoon nap, and it seemed like I hadn't even closed my eyes good when the phone rang. It went kind of like this. Dad? I said, who is this? It's Brent, Dad. Oh, what are you doing, son? Dad? I've got the thing stuck. I said, you got it stuck? Well, that thing will go through most anything. You can't back it out or anything. No, Dad, it's stuck. I said, well.
Here's the question.
Okay, well, where are you?
Where are you? I thought, oh, gosh. Now, I can't get around that question. And I was
on Amhill Pike. And I got in my pickup and drive down there. And there you are, mud up to your hips.
Yep.
Because y'all had to wade out of all that, trying to push that car out.
A daddy's look can speak more words than actual words anytime, especially when you've done something deliberately exactly opposite of what they said do or not do. And you said, do not. You gave me all the freedom in the world. You said, where y'all going? Well, we didn't know. We were bored, just going to drive around.
Yeah.
And you said, all right, but whatever you do, do not go to Elm Hill Pike. And we pulled out of our driveway. And instead of turning left, we turned right.
And went directly.
And we went straight to, and we're sitting at that red light. So if we turn left, it's mud all the way to Donaldson Pike.
Yeah.
If we turn right, we would go towards Briley Parkway. And I said, that don't look that bad. I remember saying,
famous last words.
Well, it don't look that bad. And Barry said, yeah, I think we can make it. And I look back on that now thinking, what happened from the time of the instruction from you that said, don't go to Elm Hill Pike, to a mile and a half down the road, and your instruction is gone. And now we're reasoning, two 16-year-old boys, it don't look that bad, and I think we can make it. I mean, in reality, we should have said, I want to obey my father. Because I'm pretty sure he knows more than I do. He's on down the road in life way. He's got more experience.
When you were 16, you thought you knew more than I. I knew more than you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the way it should be. That's
the way it should be, but
that's not reality.
Most time it doesn't work out that way.
No. I mean, I didn't even know.
It didn't work for me when I was 16.
No, I don't think it does, yeah. So, yeah, I call you. But here's how awesome I think, I believe that God's working in our lives, even when we can't see it or we don't want him to, or he's working, because when you got down there, which is the most horrifying.
That's probably the second time he saved you.
Yeah. The most horrifying thing is when you've done something wrong and you've had to call your daddy for help and you see that pickup truck coming.
I pull up and I see the thing.
Part of it,
down
the top
there.
Half of it.
I see the top half of it. Mud is up everywhere. Where y'all had gotten out and tried to push in, there's trenches all around, and it is, I mean, I'm not talking about, I've seen gumbo mud in Louisiana that was nothing like this.
Yeah.
I said, son, I told you specifically not to come in there. I know, Dad.
At least I was repentant.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you were standing off from me because you didn't know whether you were fixing to get a lick or not.
Exactly. I can remember, though, in my mind's eye, I can see that the thing stuck, and I can see a bulldozer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we saw that guy come
walking. A guy?
From the other end. He came walking from the other end.
Yeah. He came up. He was the bulldozer driver. He had come to check on his equipment on a Sunday afternoon.
Ain't nobody in there except me and the thing.
And he pulled the car out.
I don't know what we would have done if he hadn't come along.
Couldn't have gotten it out.
Your pickup truck wouldn't have. You'd have got it stuck too.
Yeah.
I don't know what we would have done.
It'd just have stayed there. I would have to call it a wrecker, and at that time, it would probably have been over $100, which I didn't have $100.
Yeah. There was no hint of anger. There was no hint of disappointment in me. You were just
at that time.
You were very calm. Yeah. You were very calm, and you just said, he pulled it, that guy, the bulldozer, pulled us out, and then you said, go to the car wash and clean this car off and come straight home. And so I did. And I remember when me and Barry were watching that thing, we were like, man, your dad was so calm. It's like I know, man, but that's, I mean, we did exactly what he told us not to, so something ain't right. Something's like, it's, the wrath is still coming. This ain't over by a long shot. And so Barry's like, oh, I don't want to go. So Barry went home. Yeah, I don't want to go back over your house. And so I walk in, and we got it clean. I got home, and I walk in, and I'm just thinking, all right, here it comes. Here it comes. And I remember you sitting in your chair in the den, and I walked through, and I almost got through. I was headed upstairs, and you said, Brent, I said, oh, God, here it comes. So, yeah, Dad. He said, I need your keys. I was like, oh, there it is. You know, just ground me or whip me or do something. Hide my guitar for 2 weeks or something, you know. And I said, well, how am I going to get to school? And you said, there's a school bus that comes by here every morning at 6:30.
You be on it.
That was the worst punishment. But I've had that story, and it boggled me of how calm you were, because in my mind, you had every right to punish me however you, I mean, you could have taken my whole life away for as long as you wanted to. And you didn't. And that, I think that was the more shocking to me. And I'm just thinking, I didn't know what to do with that. It's like, that right there is self-control, because he ought to be livid. Well, Dad, it's been fun. It's been good to talk to you.
Come on back anytime.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for listening. We want to make sure that you subscribe to the show. We would love for you to email us. It's BrentLambPodcast@gmail.com. If you got questions or comments, please subscribe to Instagram. It's BrentLambPodcast on Instagram. Facebook is BrentLambMusic. And I hear the music playing, so we're going to let the music take over, and we will see y'all next week.